Welcome back to Misunderstood. I mean, we're back, we're kicking it, we're calm, we're cozy. And it's been an interesting one. This is only coming out in December, I think. And we're chilling here in November. And if you are having festive time, I'm wishing you the best. I'm wishing you all a Merry Christmas if you celebrate and you're enjoying life. I'm here today with Katlego Mokgosi, who is the ex-deputy head at St. David's, or was the ex-deputy head a year ago, currently in university and currently engaged in a space of conversation, in a space of politics, in a space of social media influencing, if I were to say that. Introduce yourself, how are you doing, and let's get it running.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katlego Mokgosi. I am a student. I'm a creative, most of all. So everything I do is informed by my involvement in the creative space. I cook. I post videos on TikTok. I used to be very heavy into social media activism. I'm not in that space as much anymore. And I'm a big advocate for the Black identity, the Black child, and anything that is Black, really.
Nah, I feel you. I kind of want to start there and get into that in terms of why you've decided to essentially step away from the Black identity.
So, I don't know if I would say I've stepped away, but I would definitely say my activism has changed its form, right? Because I think the problem with social media activism is you're trying to reach everyone and you're going to end up reaching no one. You're going to put something on a story for 24 hours. Someone's going to comment and be like, wow, spitting, wow, real, wow, facts. But no one's going to do anything. Whereas if you are putting in incremental changes into systems directly, then you're actually going to be impacting the way in which society works and the way in which that Black child is represented, which is what I ended up doing in my high school career.
Mm. Yeah. And I want to speak about your high school career, but before we get into that, the question I have for you is, do you consider social media activism activism? Because with more and more people claiming that social justice chain, claiming to be fighting for a specific cause, claiming to be the voice of the people, do you still consider that actually being active? Do you consider that actually leading to social change?
I consider it activism for the self, and not so much for the movement, right? Because what you're trying to do there is you're trying to show people that you care. You're not caring necessarily. So you're doing nothing outside of what you're showing us to be an activist. So I think it can form part of activism. But as soon as that's your only avenue of activism, I would say it becomes a more conscious cleansing exercise than it does an exercise of activism.
Nah, I feel that. I feel that. And I feel that because I think people don't realize how much it's their education and like no one actually cares. But also there's just like a desensitivity to it at the moment. As like you see anything that's social justice and you kind of just go, I've seen this before, and you keep it pushing. And I want to speak about your high school career because that's the most amount of people which I've interviewed so far. In that, how did you feel being at the school that you were? What was your role as deputy head and how did you feel leaving that role having finished that year?
I suppose I'll start in grade 8, if we have time.
Go ahead.
Let's rock once. So grade 8 starts, I see end of years where my ambitions start, right? I'm coming into high school from a public school, first of all. So now I'm surrounded by Brew and Oak and I'm like, yeah. Run. What happened to ma'am?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, this is interesting. First term I get absolutely rocked by the private school curriculum. I'm like, what in God's name is happening here? From my top 3 to not even close to top 10, bro. I'm sitting at 50s for subject. But eventually I adjust. I kind of find my way, and end of year, fast forward a bit, we are now in October, right? It's the now, I don't want to call it crowning, but it's the exchange of heads, right? Yeah. So this is the first time I see a black boy put on that blazer. And it was Malaika, right? But he was a black boy. And I was like, okay, damn. I know that that's what I want to do.
Mm.
And so my entire journey was informed by I want to become Hit Boy. And that was my grade 10 is when it starts to change. Grade 10, I still have the same ambition, but for a completely different reason. I want to become Hit Boy because I want to make the space a space that is safe for black boys, right? Because even, for example, my primary school, majority of the kids there were black, but it was still a home for the white man. It was still a school that is catered and is still, when you think about the ideal child that is envisioned when they create a school like that, it's created for a white kid, yeah. Right? It's just that apartheid allowed black people to be in the space, but not necessarily to own the space and to claim the space as their own. And so you can only imagine that that's exacerbated in a private school environment. So I will not say that St. David's was racist or that the boys were racist, because that's not the case. But I will say that the system creates a culture that doesn't invite black boys in the same way that it invites white boys. And so what became important for me was ensuring that we're able to create the space and augment the space in such a way that black people can just feel like, oh, I'm coming to school and I'm enjoying myself, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have to think about speaking my language and making the white boys uncomfortable type of thing. Because we were busy saying hey, 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 which was their own slang, their own lingo, right? But we're picking it up. So they should do the same for us and not in a mockery type of way. Because when they're picking up black slang, it's words like, is this a family show?
Nah.
It's words like, Mahosh. And I'm like, bro, who taught you that? Which black person is responsible for that shit?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, this is shocking. Let's definitely do better for the space. So it then becomes my goal for my grade 10. This is also ironically when I'm a social media activist, but yeah. to now make the space inviting for black boys. So that's when I co-found the Lady Committee towards the end of my grade 10 year, beginning of grade 11. And that's the Committee for Lingual Expansion, Diversity and Inclusion. And the idea here was that it's not really about language. It's about language at the surface, because that's what the school is willing to bite on.
Yeah.
The truth is that this is about revolutionizing the space. It's about changing practices that are far greater than the language barriers that we see. So first step in prompting that revolution is allowing black boys to claim the space and feeling like they have the ability to do so. And so what I do is I come up with, or I want to start Gwejo in St. David's. So I found as a subcommittee of the Lady Committee, the Gwejo boys, right? Initially, it's just a few boys that I'm like, okay, let's do this, gents, let's rock. And here it's just to build the spirit of blackness and to put it in the face of the school, to say, black boys are here, we're going to go in the middle of the amphitheater after school and we're going to sing a bunch of black songs. Don't be scared, it's just for fun. And it's just going to be something to make us feel welcome. Obviously, the long-term goal is this is something we want to integrate into spirit, right? So that's avenue number one. We start the Gwejo. We work on it. We perfect it to make sure that there's no room for them to not want to include it in their space because they say it sounds too, you know, unprofessional. Blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
Blah. So that's what we do. And management is like, okay, cool. I support Lady. And then I give them Gwejo. They're like, okay, cool. We support Gwejo. And then we're like, okay, let's do it better and bigger. So I say that I want to do a festival. And this is the initial aim of the festival, or aim of the Lady Committee. Every year, there's going to be a festival for 3 days where we get vendors from the township. So we're talking Alex, Soweto, any township that's nearby. And they come through, they give us food. You know, like Kasi food, yeah. South African food. Fere, that's the first part. We integrate the food element. Second thing is music. Get music that is piano, like anything African, really, yeah. Anything South African. Fere. And then third thing we want to do is we want to look at performances. So we want gambu dancers, Tswana dancers, Bantula dancers. And that's the aim that I want in the long term for this. But now, mind you, it's the midway through my grade 11 year. So timing wise, I don't have a lot of time to do this. So initially I say, okay, let's just do a language week. So once every week at lineup in the morning, greet someone in the language of the month. So if it's Soto, so the aim is by the end of the month, you know how to speak Soto, a basic conversation.
Yeah.
So we start that. And then eventually I get them to budge grade 11 on, give me a day. Don't give me a week, don't give me 3 days, give me a day for this lady festival. I'll bring you two vendors, nyana,
yeah,
and a little bit of music. They bite. They're like, okay, cool, let's rock. So we do that. I think it was on my birthday month, around 26th or so of July. We rock that festival. So that's the first edition. That's the first introduction. So now we're cooking lady. We want it to be a big festival in the long run. We have the Guicho that's also brewing. And it's cooking. And then Q, I think also at the beginning of this grade 11 year, the introduction of Mr. Mantata, right? Who is the deputy head of student affairs now, I think. But he was also a big revolutionary in the space. So he's helping me with all these other projects, right? And in between, him and I are looking at ways to elevate. So that's when the conversation assemblies come in. We're getting people like Bontlan Talax, we're getting people like Eusebius Makaiza, people that are vocal. We had some apartheid activists that were there as well. So now the space, people are starting to talk, right? And this is where the fear element comes in. I thought we were cooking now for the black boys. And I think I got a bit excited. So I'm like, okay, for the one conversation assembly, let's get a sango. Life. Fede, idea goes to management. And now they need to tiptoe. Because at this point, I would say that I think I've garnered a level of significant social capital for myself.
Yeah.
As the guy who's for the black boys.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's a bit difficult for them to say no, because they afraid. Yeah, man. Blacks
gonna come. Yeah.
But not in a very like extreme way. Like in a very, I'd say, light way. Right. They don't want anything they can't control. So they say that they don't think the Sangoma is a good idea because the boys, you know, the Catholic religion, it might be in like, they might butt heads, blah blah blah. Like, okay, bad. We'll still continue to cook. End of the year comes. I don't get the blue blazer, right? So obviously the way the leadership process works at St. David's, the head leader position, is you go for an interview with Mr. Teal, the head of school, and then the head of school will then use their discretion to decide. Use their discretion, obviously consult with teachers, but it's not like the boys vote type of process, right?
Okay.
So I don't get the position, right? And at first, obviously I'm angry. I'm like, is it because of what I'm starting to do? Is it because of how I've reframed my character in the school? But then I eventually accept that maybe I just had a worse interview than the person who got head of school. But even then, it doesn't matter, because I've created the platforms through which I want to exercise the leadership I wanted. Because my goal is no longer head boy for the sake of head boy, but it's head boy for the sake of black boys, right? And if I can still do deputy head boy for the sake of black boys in terms of how I'm reforming the space, then that works for me. So fast forward to my grade 12 year. We get Guicho Avenue to come through. They come, they train the boys, they give us like some guidance on Guicho, they give us a live performance, and then finally we've cooked Guicho enough to bring it to the school. So we take it to the school, and they take it on well, actually. So we did the first song, Wema Nana. They absorbed it so well. I was actually so surprised. It wasn't perfect, obviously. Still had a lot of white boy rhythm, so it wasn't touching where it needed to touch, but it was a start.
Yeah.
And it's because of the way I think we had introduced the black identity. It wasn't an abrupt thing, but it was something that we worked on very slowly and very incrementally. And I was working alongside a friend of mine, Divine. He's at UP now. So yeah, we get it done. And then finally, in that year, we take it to the school. Now we're working on it a bit more consistently. They give me a bigger lady festival now. We're talking about four vendors, bigger performances, better sound. and it's just incrementally improving. And then finally, obviously I matriculate, and I think I had made a significant mark on the space. These committees are still ongoing. This year, in fact, the vision that I set up in grade 10 finally came into fruition. The Lady Festival was a 3-day festival, huge investment. I don't know about disclosing the amount that the school invested in it, but they invested a lot, right? Because I think the first year they gave me close to nothing to work with, so yeah. It was people that I knew that I asked to come through and help us out. Year two, they gave me something that was a bit more sizable, but still not great, right? I think it was within the range of about 10 to 20. And the third year, my year where I wasn't there, it was way more significant. And so there was an effort now to invest in the space to become a more black space. So essentially, the relationship between my removal from my social media activism and the impact of my real life activism has proven almost a direct proportion for me, because I removed myself from the space of people knowing what I'm doing, because not a lot of people know that this is how I was involved in the St. David space. But a lot of people that are there now understand the space to be changing, incrementally. So it's not a huge change, but I think it's the most important kind of change, because I get like messages ever so often now, boys asking me to help them become head boy. I'm like, bro, I wasn't even head boy, but yeah. Sure, I got you. And yeah, I think that was really what was important for me. Even now, Gwijo's growing, it's huge. They even have a picture now for the yearbook, which is a small thing, but a huge step from where we were, right? From only having like the Ruggers Brewers getting pictures to now also just a bunch of black boys singing, being a recognized cultural, getting pictures in the whatever, being posted on our official school social media page. So yeah, I think for me, it was important that whatever I did once I changed my why for becoming head boy would outlive me being at the school, because there's no point that these things rely on me. So a lot of what I did relied on all the other collaboration from all the other black boys. And they came through, bro. Like a lot of black boys, a lot of white kids. It was just amazing. So yeah, that's been me. That's been my high school journey. And I think that's why I will miss high school. And I always say I love my high school because of how willing they were to accept the change. Just, yeah.
Nah, I mean, that's an amazing story for firsts, because I didn't even know that. And I think it shows that when you put your mind to something, but also you're invested in something and there's a why, you're kind of good at that point. My question to you before we get into the school stuff is, how liberal did you feel your school was when you left? Because you speak about this movement towards progression, or progression starting to be felt. When you were there, what was your feeling when you started, and what was your feeling when you left, and how do you feel now about it?
I'm sure, as you know, because you're also a debater and you're just an intellectual in general, that liberalism is obviously something that even as an individual doesn't exist in absolutes, right? Yeah. So I'm not absolutely liberal or absolutely conservative. There were aspects in which they were more liberal and more willing to become liberal, and other aspects where they weren't. But I will say it was never a space where I would say it was heavily conservative, right? I think, unlike other schools, the problem would be that the boys would want to mobilize and the management would want to keep things the same. Yeah. I think St. David's had the inverse problem. The boys wouldn't want to change, but the management would be more willing to listen and be more willing to implement things. And even then, it was just, I think, the ecosystems that the boys existed in, like at home, etc., etc. So I think the space has always been fairly receptive, right? I can't necessarily pinpoint liberal or non-liberal, but I can say that they became more proactive, right? So they stopped waiting for somebody to say, listen, here's this idea I have, or listen, here's what we think the space should look like. And they started taking active steps to reform the space in and of themselves. So I think that's the big change I can say from the time I arrived to the time I left, is the proactivity when it came to how they exercised their liberalness.
Okay. Nah, I hear you. And I want to step into a very controversial point that kind of happens in your school year, between my school and your school. And it happens on the rugby field. And there are things said about someone who, I don't know if I were to say accused of taking certain actions against women, or is known to have. And that environment, that space, not necessarily being as far left as the rest of society is. And what was your feeling managing that space, being in those conversations when things like that did occur?
So it was obviously a very difficult time to be there, right? Because it's like they're doing the correct thing in the wrong way.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's this individual that's been accused of whatever this individual's been accused of. And what they're doing is calling him out, right? But it's not calling him out because what you did was wrong. But we're calling you out because we want to win this game. We want to throw you off your game. So I suppose it wasn't a conversation that I will say I was deeply involved in.
Right? Okay.
It was mainly a conversation that I observed. And the teachers just got involved. The teachers got very upset. And they... You know, there were some ramifications around spirit, and they were like, okay, you guys shouldn't do this anymore. And then that's basically where it ended, really. Like, it didn't go too far.
Okay.
To my recollection. Not in the action itself, but the actions that the school took weren't severe at all, I don't think. I don't know that I have a lot to say on that particular.
And then just in the space in general, in terms of being on the stands, things being said, I know a few people have been in incidents where racist things have been said. There's been homophobia, there's been various other prejudiced things that have been said. How did you feel being there, and was there ever a point where you were like, this isn't me, or this is for me? Because I know there's a lot of people who sometimes have that dissonance where they are for the school, for the spirit, but aren't necessarily for the belief and the things that are being said at that specific moment.
100%. I think that's actually a very interesting chat that you're having, because sometimes you will need to even correct yourself, right? You will be so like removed from the real world in that moment. You'll think that this game is like the Rugby World Cup final. Yeah. Everything is on the line. And so you find yourself not joining in, but not even thinking about how wrong what's happening is.
Yeah.
You understand? Like, you are just there, just another participant, another bystander, not calling anyone out. I suppose in that way, it was at times a very, I didn't even realize it until I'm going home and I'm in the silence of the car and I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
They're really saying all that? That's crazy. But then at the same time, you think to yourself, like, it's still a step in the right direction, right? Because from what I understood when I was speaking to some alumni about how the spirit used to be, is the war cries, if we're seeing a Model C school, would be your dad works for my dad type of vibes. And to progress from that, I think is still progress. But we still need to do better, I suppose, in terms of the extent to which we allow the competition to consume us.
Fair. No, and I agree with that. And I guess it's hard because I think I was more invested in this space and sometimes I used to condone a lot of it. I think part being that we were just one of the better schools in the private school space. So we had the arrogance. We had the arrogance, regardless of what you say. And we felt like we could be on a pedestal of sorts and say what we wanted to do. I want to speak to you about the university space, because I guess activism is still a part of your life in your day-to-day running. Are you involved in it? Do you ever speak to it? What's your feeling around it at the moment?
I'll be real as well. I think I'm not involved. And I don't know that I will be involved in activism in a school space ever again. And I won't tell you because, like, high school taxed me. Because it's not that, right?
Yeah.
The truth is, what I was doing in high school was important, it was valuable, it may change, but it's nothing. Like, it's in the grander scheme of things, I'm helping the elite black boys feel at home in an elite school, right? To be an activist in a university takes different. It's not even different. I don't even know how to explain it.
Yeah.
Because I lead a protest at St. David's. I'm getting called to Mr. Teal's office or the headmaster's office, and probably assuming that, you know, I didn't follow procedure. I'm getting called to the headmaster's office, and, you know, there's some sort of disciplinary hearing of sorts, whatever. I do that shit in a uni.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, I am seeing tear gas. I'm seeing the back of a police van. I'm seeing. Yeah. And so I can't be protected. Because at the same, like, the thing about high school activism is the school is still obligated to shield you, right? Mm. So there's certain things they won't put on your permanent record, for example. Or they're just going to keep it in the bubble of school, right? Unis do not care. So when you're arrested, they're happy that this problem is gone. And the only way that they will fight against that is if more people start revolting as a result of this person's arrest. That's the only time they'll intervene and help you out. And so the cost of activism in the real world is far higher than it is in a ecosystem like the private schools, right? Because at Wits, when the protests were happening, I was not there. I was not involved. I didn't go near campus. I didn't dream of campus.
Yeah.
And I mean, I understood the struggles. I sympathized with that, with them, but that's all I could do. And I think it would be so disingenuous for me to get involved, because I understood the struggles that I was fighting for in high school. In uni, I can't understand. Like, I would never understand somebody being forced to sleep in a library and not eating for days, or hiding when it's time for libraries to close so they can sleep. Or not having student accommodation. Like, those are not the problems I face. And I'm not saying that those aren't my problems to fight against. I'm just saying that me trying to lead that fight or trying to be involved in that fight wouldn't be helpful to that fight, in my opinion. And I also don't, I am a person who has my own beliefs, my own aspirations, and I can't afford to incur the cost of activism, which is like a hard thing and probably like a really shitty thing to say, but it's the truth. Like, I don't want to go to jail for being part of a protest and having that on my record permanently.
Yeah.
Or having to stop school or whatever else. So my involvement in the uni space from a activism perspective is very, it's almost non-existent, if I'm being honest. But in other spaces that are fairly low stakes, I can still get involved, but nothing insane, to be honest.
So then, do you see yourself getting involved in the SRC space, or do you feel that's too big, too political?
Of course, that is a very, very, very political space. So I don't see myself getting involved. No, it's bad. That whole process, it's enough to get someone killed. Like, on God, like, it gets so deep and so dire. And you ask yourself, like, what's happening? Where are we? Because the ANC, or what is it? I think it's called the PS. PAC. I don't know what it's called, but the ANC student wing has basically been ruling over Wits for as long as Wits has existed, liberally, right? And now this year you get the EFF, who just claimed the seats, right? The EFF are cleaning, like, the entire country. I think they have UP, I don't know about UCT, but they have UP, they have Wits, and they have a few others, but they have quite a lot. I think they have UL, University of Limpopo, as well. So essentially, that space is no longer just a competition of ideology. It's like a political party involvement type of thing. And that completely, for me, changes the dynamics. And it makes it difficult to actually do anything. So if you run as an independent, your chances of not getting elected are 100%. Like, already be sure that you're going to just watch the elections unfold, boy. No, don't even ask for votes. Sit down. Sit down, mind your business, drink tea, or affiliate yourself. And the cost of affiliation is also high, bro. Because the inter-party part, it's a lot, it's a lot.
And nah, I mean, it's good to hear it from you and good to hear it from someone who goes to uni. Because that's obviously the goal for me next year, to engage with people in that space. And my question to you in closing, which is the question I've asked most people who have been in leadership, who understand to some extent what it is to lead over people. Are you voting next year? If so, why? If you aren't, why? And what do you think people should look for in a political party?
Yo, 4 questions. Give me a Friday's question. So, on the issue of am I voting? Ideally, I would like to, right? But I would say that this is the most privileged I am in the political space, because in my head, I don't, you know, need to vote, right? In inverted commas.
Yeah.
So my need not to vote translates into me not knowing the real difference between the EFF and the ANC and the DA and the bloody, COPE manifesto, yeah. Right? So, like, my political literacy is so low, right? Or I understand politics as an idea, but I'm not 100% privy as to how it's playing out in the real world. At best, like, the law, because I'm studying law, informs it a bit, but not in a crazy way.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that I know enough to vote. Okay. And I am knowledgeable enough to cast a legitimate vote. I don't know if I see myself looking at a manifesto. I mean, I'm gonna try, but you know,
yeah.
But I do think voting is important, so I am gonna register. I'm not registered either.
Register to vote. That's the word.
Yeah.
Register.
I'm gonna register, and I mean, see what I can do. Like, read, because there's also some new political party that's for students. It's called Rise or something like that. And they've been like mobilizing students quite a bit. So looking into that. So I mean, yeah, I'll definitely look into that and voting. I'm not saying that I will. I'm not saying that I won't. I'm just saying that I don't know enough right now to vote. So as it stands, I'll say no. Because I'm also not registered, so I can't. But after I register, then it's a different conversation. Terms of what to look for in a political party, as if it was like a Tinder date, I'd say just accessibility. Like, the one thing that makes the EFF what it is and also like makes it loved and hated is they say what they want in the most accessible way possible.
Yeah.
Right? Because politics can't be convoluted and hidden behind pages and pages of political literature, because there's a range of political literacy in your voters. So making sure that your message is accessible to your voters is absolutely key, but also not in a manipulative kind of way, right? Mm. Like, don't just because now you're speaking to black people. Speak the way you speak, bro. Just don't speak like you're in a political debate. That's the first thing. The second thing, I think, is a why. A very clear and simple why. Because I think political parties try to help everyone, and they get lost in that, and they end up making false promises, and they end up under-delivering, etc., etc., etc. And the third thing is being okay with how what the system is, right? Because you can't say, I'ma come in and remove corruption. Bro, we had corruption in apartheid. There's corruption in the US. Corruption isn't something you can remove because it's inside a certain individual that wants to commit it. It's their greed, right? But making sure that in those instances, you get like the least corruptible people. Yeah. So, okay, you're giving your brother a tender. Let it be the case that your brother can work and can service whatever it is he's servicing, right? Because that's also just how the business world works. Yeah. Corruption is the nepotism, which is how generational wealth is acquired, really. So leveraging the system to be ethical in its unethical way, if that makes sense. So yeah, making sure that the corruption that exists is mitigated, or it doesn't harm your why, doesn't harm the overall end goal, instead of just saying, corruption, you know?
Nah, I feel you, I feel you. And in closing, what's your message to people for the end of 2023, going into 2024? What's the one takeaway you want to give them?
So I know a few people that like struggle a lot with mental health, and are kind of like always battling with themselves, etc., etc. But I would just say that for those that are not on a medical level of mental health, for those that just need a push to get out of bed, right? Not those that are deeply, deeply in the hole. 2023, 2024, 2025, life is just gonna get harder, bro. And we can't, we need to stop expecting life to come to us and to cuddle us and to work for us, because life won't do that. You just need to get stronger. You need to get up. No one's gonna help you up, no one's gonna cry for you, but you just need to take ownership of your life, take accountability for your narrative, and just push what you need to push. So I'd just say get up and do what needs to be done, head down and run.
Nah, I agree with that. I want to say thank you for coming. Thank you for being here, sharing your insights. And I think you heard it here. I think when there's a vision, when there's a dream, you're able to execute. I think there's an interesting being said about activism and what does it actually mean to be active in society. But most of all, I think the takeaway here is know why you're voting, know how you're voting. Mm. Have that knowledge, have that takeaway. And as always, we appreciate you if you've gotten this far. This is Misunderstood.